So today we are going to talk about anger and a few other things. But, you know, I was headed south, it was probably 15 years ago, on Whitehall Road. I was on the inside lane, and I pulled up to the stoplight where the Rite Aid used to be. And my dad was riding shotgun. He was up here visiting with us. And a gal pulled up beside us. It was summertime. It was hot out. And she had two large dogs in the back seat of her car. And I just happened to notice the dogs, you know. And all of a sudden, those dogs started attacking the window. They were just furious. They're trying to get out of that car and barking and clawing and all that. And the owner of the dogs is trying to calm them down. And I thought, what in the world is going on? Well, my dad had been pulling faces at those dogs. And he thought it was pretty funny. He has a long history of pranking dogs, and he did. He kind of enjoyed getting dogs upset. He enjoyed getting me upset, too, which was, you know, always interesting. But that's kind of what he did. Well, today I want to ask the question, what makes you mad? What causes your anger? For me, tailgaters, people who ride 5 feet from my bumper, really irritate me. I was coming from Whitehall one time, and somebody was 5 feet from my bumper with the lights on bright the whole time. I'd speed up, and they'd speed up with me. I'd slow down to like 40 miles an hour. Come on, pass me, you know? No, right on my bumper. I pull into Wesco up here, find out it's a Michigan State trooper on my tail the whole time. And I didn't argue with him because he had a gun and I didn't. But he was doing that. And that just really irritated me. I didn't say anything to him again because he was armed. But the thing is, that just really bugs me when people do that. Another thing that bugs me is TV ads, especially for drugs. Just irritate the dickens out of me. These are all lies designed to trap ignorant people. And they work. Talk to your doctor. Well, I doubt if my doctor wants to talk to me about that. But that's what they say. Sometimes I'll watch a news show, and then as soon as an ad comes on, I change the channel. Usually put Netflix on so I don't have to watch any of those ads. I also get kind of angry when I get ripped off. This past summer, had some landscaping done. And, there we go. That pipe with a hole in it there, it's one of my irrigation pipes that the landscapers hit with a spike. And when next time my sprinklers came on, my basement flooded. And so if you want a recommendation for a landscaper, I'll tell you which one not to go to. I sent them a bill for the cleanup costs, but I haven't heard from them. What is the cause of anger? What really causes it? And I believe the answer for that is unmet expectations. You know, we expect people to behave a certain way, they don't, and we react with anger. I expect people not to tailgate. I taught 21-year-old people how to drive UPS trucks. I was a driver ed instructor, and I expect people to drive the way I taught people back in the 70s how to drive. You know, I expect people not to tailgate. Well, silly me, they're going to tailgate. I expect TV ads to tell the truth. Silly me. I expect landscapers to not rip me off. Silly me. But now if I change my expectations, then I don't get angry. Because anger is always a choice, and I believe that mature people get angry less because they have realistic expectations. Now, I can choose to not get angry at state cops if I expect them to not use their turn signals, and if I expect them to tailgate me. And then sometimes they surprise me and they don't tailgate. And I actually saw one use his turn signals the other day. I was quite happy. But you know, when I feel angry, I also feel stupid. And I tell myself to grow up. So, how about you? What makes you angry? I asked this question probably 40 years ago as a young pastor in a sermon one time. One of my buddies sitting in the back row of the church, he said, "What makes you angry?" And he pointed at me. Hopefully he's out of prison by now. But, we got to ask the question here. What gets your goat? What frosts your flakes? What blows your fuse? What makes you go ballistic? You know, when people talk to me about their anger, it's usually about a spouse or a family member, a kid or a parent or something like that. Sometimes it's the government. Lately, it's inflation. And I found that if you change your expectations, then your mood changes too. Humans are imperfect, and that's not going to change. Humans will not live up to other human standards. I will not live up to your standards, and you will not live up to mine, and that's okay. Realizing this greatly reduces anger. If you lower your expectations, your anger dissipates. Now, today we're going to look at a puzzling passage of Jesus cleansing the temple. And it is puzzling because people have said, "Oh, Jesus was angry and he was violent and he made a whip and chased people out of the temple and all that." We got to look at the passage closely. Now, it's in all four Gospels. In the other three Gospels, it's at the end of Jesus' ministry. But in the Gospel of John, it's at the beginning. And, you know, I don't know how to reconcile that unless he cleaned out the temple more than once. But that's how it happened. So this is from the second chapter of John. We're going to go through the Gospel of John from now until Easter. It was nearly time for the Jewish Passover celebration, so Jesus went to Jerusalem. Now, the Passover was the highest of the holy days for the Jewish people. If you lived within a certain distance, I believe it was 15 miles about from Jerusalem, and you were male, you were required to attend this. Women didn't have to go, but men did. And, you know, the Passover, of course, is commemorating their deliverance from Egypt, from the slavery in Egypt. It always takes place, still does, same time as Easter, because we believe that Jesus was crucified during the Passover. And the Passover is always the first full moon after the spring equinox. So that's how that's set. Or whenever Reese Buffer's spring break is, it seems to go along with it. But that's what it is. And so that's what Jesus was doing there. And in the temple area, he saw merchants selling cattle, sheep, and doves for sacrifices. He also saw dealers at tables exchanging foreign money. Now, the tradition is, what we think was going on, is that they were selling these animals at a huge profit, greatly inflated prices, that you could, for instance, if you were poor, you would want to sacrifice doves. And you could buy doves on the other end of Jerusalem for like a tenth of the cost of what they were in the temple. It's kind of like if you go to a Michigan State football game, you know, and you want to get a snack, it's 10 times higher than, you know, what would cost you to buy it at Meijer and smuggle it in, you know, because they just inflate the prices that much. And they were exchanging money because you were required to pay a temple tax, and that tax could only be paid in Jewish money, in Hebrew money, which was the shekel. Well, the Romans were running things, and so the monetary unit was the denarius. But you couldn't use Roman money to pay the temple tax. You had to use Hebrew money. So they were exchanging it. You know, it's kind of like the difference between American dollars and Canadian dollars. You know, they had to exchange it, and again, they were just ripping people off like crazy. They charged them exorbitant prices for the Hebrew money. The denarius was the common thing, and nobody had shekels, so they had to buy them. And that's what was going on there. Now here comes the juicy part. Jesus made a whip from some ropes and chased them all out of the temple. He drove out the sheep and cattle, scattered the money changers' coins over the floor and turned over their tables. Then, going over to the people who sold doves, he told them, "Get these things out of here. Stop turning my father's house into a marketplace." The dicey part is, you know, people who are prone to support violence say that Jesus, oh, look, he made a whip and chased them out of the temple. Well, it says he drove the sheep and the cattle out. You know, and if you know anything about cattle, and I, you know, grew up with them, so, you know, but, you know, the males were all neutered. But Hebrew law prohibits neutering animals. So these were bulls in the temple. And if you know anything about bulls, they are territorial. If there's a cow within smelling distance, they get really feisty. And the way you manage them is with a bull whip. Now, you don't actually strike the bull, but you take that whip and pop it, and they respond to it. I found this in my office between the services, a little riding crop or whatever you want to call it, but we use these to show pigs. They, you know, they don't really hurt. Does anybody want to try it? But what they do is they make a lot of noise, see? I said, went to one kid and said, "What this church needs is more discipline." But, you know, what it just makes a lot of noise. It didn't hurt the animals. And what we have to notice about this passage, it does not say that he whipped any of the animals or any people. It just says that he tipped over the money changers' tables and said there's no marketplace allowed in the temple. I think he did it all with a cool head. I don't think he was angry at all. Then his disciples remembered this prophecy from the scriptures. "Passion for God's house will consume me." But the Jewish leaders demanded, "What are you doing? If God gave you the authority to do this, show us a miraculous sign to prove it." See, they were asking for trouble there. But the Jewish leaders, remember, they had a big old enterprise going here. They were making lots of money off of this stuff. But Jesus remained calm. Now, he's God Almighty in a human body. And if somebody was doing that to me, I don't think I could have been that generous. I'd have probably just said, "You know, your heart stops beating right now." Or turn him into a pile of ash right on the spot. But he didn't. He's patient. And he was collected. That's a good thing for us to understand. Then Jesus goes on and says this. Now remember, there's seven major signs in the Gospel of John of who Jesus was. This is one of them that he's talking about here. He says, "All right," Jesus replied, because they asked for a sign, "destroy this temple, and in 3 days I will raise it up." "What?" they exclaimed. "It's taken 46 years to build this temple, and you can rebuild it in 3 days?" But when Jesus said this temple, he meant his own body. After he was raised from the dead, his disciples remembered he had said this, and they believed both the scriptures and what Jesus had said. See, Jesus' belief and the belief of most people in those days is that we are spiritual beings in a temple of flesh, and that temple's going to wear out one day and be replaced with another one. Jesus is talking about how his fleshly temple would be destroyed and in 3 days rise up again. He was predicting his resurrection there. And then here comes the part of this passage that is so often neglected, and it really shouldn't be. It says this: "Because of the miraculous signs Jesus did in Jerusalem at the Passover celebration, many began to trust in him. But Jesus didn't trust them, because he knew all about people. No one needed to tell him about human nature, for he knew what was in each person's heart." Let that soak in for a minute. Jesus didn't trust them because he knew what they were really like. He knew all about people. He knew about human nature. He knew what was in each person's heart. And he had realistic expectations of humans I think that's why he kept his cool. In my early days in the Muskegon classes, I was sent to go see a pastor who was about to be fired. I was on the committee that, you know, you can't just fire a pastor in our system. You have to bring the classes in on that. And this church had gone through all the right steps, and I was kind of the delivery boy. I went to this guy and told him that he was done. And he pulled this passage out because he felt betrayed. And he says, yeah, you can never trust in people. And that's always just stuck with me every time I run across this passage since then. But, you know, Jesus did keep his cool, because he had these kind of expectations of humans. If you go through the Gospels, there's really three things that Jesus didn't like. He didn't like added on religious rules that were not from God. You know, and this whole thing about sacrificing bulls and doves and whatnot, I'm sure he didn't like that. He didn't like taking advantage of the poor or the ignorant, which is exactly what they were doing in the temple. And he didn't like, of course, religious hypocrisy. He spoke very negatively about these things. Now, I think he kept his cool when he did it. I don't think he was ranting and raving. I think he kept his cool because he had realistic expectations of human behavior. He knows us. So if you want less anger in your life, follow his model and change your expectations. Don't expect people to drive the way you think they should. Don't expect people to believe the way you think they should. Don't expect people to agree with you regarding politics. And don't expect people to always be honest. Don't expect people to always be helpful. Instead, be grateful when they are. You replace your expectations with gratitude. I'm certain that Jesus cleaned out the temple with a cool head. And you can clean up your life with a cool head too. We just need to change our expectations. Let's look at that verse again. Jesus didn't trust them because he knew all about people. No one needed to tell him about human nature, for he knew what was in each person's heart. Anger management's a big deal. We do stupid things when we're angry, make bad decisions. And I think the devil is amused when we're angry. Kind of like my dad being amused by those angry dogs in that car. When we're angry, we demonstrate our immaturity. Now, Jesus taught us, by example, to avoid anger by having realistic expectations. Jesus certainly had realistic expectations. And when we get our expectations in line with reality, we'll find that we have much less anger. And that's a much better way to live. So let's believe this good news and live in peace. Would you pray with me, please? Lord, you have blessed us in so many ways. And today we have to come to you with a confession, because we don't always manage anger in the best way. Sometimes we get angry about silly things. Sometimes we get angry because we've been hurt. But show us how, like yourself, to have the same kinds of expectations so that the anger dissipates in each of our lives. We confess to you that we have sinned many times because of our anger. And we, along with asking for forgiveness, we ask for your help in repenting and changing the way we relate to each other. Amen.